Okay, it's March 17, 2019 in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
Just now somebody asked me, they want you in Bangalore.
That's cute. So I don't know how to do that.
So
how do I part of me go to Penang and part of me go to Bangalore?
No, after you're in, fit in your this thing. So I asked the temple president to write you.
I did get an email from someone who wanted me to go to Bangalore. So maybe that was that. That's what you're here for. Yes.
The Ministry of Education, their website, right? It was down for some time and it was up again, right?
If yes.
And then there was a registration open for everybody to.
Yes.
I don't know, is it open for everybody to come in? Like myself, I just want to know what are the resources there, if we can get something out of that.
Yes.
So I cannot contribute anything there for the moment. So how does it go about? Is it like unlimited for everybody?
As far as I know, you can just go on and register.
Okay.
And then you can get resources.
And then you can get resources, yes.
Okay. Okay, so it's downloadable right away, no need to request or anything?
As far as I know. I'm not a member of the ministry.
Because the registration I found on your Facebook, so that's how I link it to that.
Yes. I'm very intentionally not a member of the ministry. But,
not me.
Yes.
But your curriculum was there?
Excuse me?
I think it was your curriculum listed in one of the.
Yes. Well, the.
Using it.
Yes. I keep saying yes. So if you go on my website, you'll find a lot of materials for free download, or miladevidasi.org. So I have a lot of resources there for free download. And I'm pretty sure all those are going to end up, I hope all those are going to end up on the Ministry of Education website as well.
Oh, okay.
I hope so.
How is yours different from the Ministry of Education website?
Yeah. Well, how is mine different? You know, they have a new website, so I'm not that familiar with it yet. My website is my website, so it has like my itinerary, my biography. It has educational materials that either I've produced or that people have given me and said I could share, or things that were done very early in ISKCON where there's no authors, we have no idea who produced them.
Syllabus.
Does it have a syllabus? Well, that's a difficult question to answer. Like, I can't put Tapasvini's up there because you have to pay for hers. But I have curriculum materials. I don't know if you would count that as a. It's not what I would call a syllabus.
Teaching aids.
There's all kinds of teaching resources, but I would call syllabus something a lot more complete. Now, the Ministry of Education, they've just started a new website. There's some fresh blood on the ministry, and some Tapa Mishra and Indira Saki, his wife, they're the ones who've done the website. They're pretty new on the ministry, about a year, and they're trying to breathe some life into the Ministry of Education. So on the Ministry of Education website, you can register, and then you can have access to the database of various educators all over the world. I don't have that on my website. That wouldn't be appropriate. Then they also will have access to the syllabus, a real syllabus from the Krishnavanti School for teaching Krishna consciousness. So that should be a fantastic resource that will be available to anyone, free to anyone who registers. And then I don't think they yet have all of my materials. Hopefully they will bring them all over. But they also have materials that I don't have that were just given to them. What else is up on their site? I don't remember. It's a fairly new site, and since the time that they made it live and I saw it, and now I've been very busy and I haven't had time to go through it in depth. They just made it live. I mean, we're talking 2 weeks ago. So the Ministry of Education has endorsed a project that I'm leading to create a full syllabus and curriculum for teaching Krishna consciousness. And it differs from the Avanti School syllabus. The Avanti School syllabus is divided by age. So they have one program for 5-year-olds, one for 6-year-olds, one for 7-year-olds. But I see most people teaching Krishna consciousness like here. You don't have 10 classrooms, you have 3. So because they have a different program for each age, you wouldn't be able to teach several ages together. So what we're working on is where you could teach everybody together, where you could, if you had to. Some places there are only one room and one teacher. So we're making it for teaching age 4 through 16 together, or being able to split it into three groups. So that's our goal. So far, we've just done a sample with two lessons. And right now, I don't know if you know Pancharatna, his daughter is working with me to produce 1 month on a Lord Chaitanya theme that will have 10 lessons. And each lesson will have for three groups. So if this is successful, if this works out well, then we'll keep producing themes until we've done 30 themes. That's the idea. And then that will be a complete syllabus for teaching Krishna consciousness for age 4 through 16. That's our aim, that's our goal, that's our desire. See what Krishna's desire is. That's what we would like to do.
This you're doing only on Sundays, Mataji? This is more for Sunday school, the syllabus?
Well, it will have our plan. It's Naveen Krishna was from the Avanti school. It's, I don't know how many times they teach per week in the school, so I'm not, I'd have
here
to look at it again.
Only once a week.
Our plan is to do 10 lessons per theme. So if you have 10 lessons per theme 4 to 5 weeks in a month, that would give you extra lessons. Now what's nice about having extra lessons is you can choose what you want to do, because some of the lessons will require very little preparation, some will require a lot of preparation. And you can see what fits your circumstance and your preparation time and so forth. So we figured also places that have more than once a week, like let's say it's a full-on academic school and they want to have two classes in Krishna consciousness a week, they could do that. Or for homeschoolers, I don't know, anybody homeschool in Malaysia? Is that?
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
So for homeschoolers, that would then give you 10 lessons per theme rather than just 4 or 5. So our idea is to make this for, you know, I don't have a microphone, and so those of you who are sitting in the back are hurting my throat.
Please come in front.
If you're sitting in the back, you're hurting my throat. If you're sitting in the back, you're hurting my throat. Sit as close as you can. There's a chair in front of you. The further away you sit from me, the more you're hurting my throat. So please consider my throat more important than your shyness. Thank you. Because I'm trained that as a teacher, I have to teach everybody in the room. So if there's people in the back, I will automatically raise my voice in order so you can hear me. I'll just do it automatically without even thinking about it. And then afterwards, I'll be sorry. So is that okay?
Yes. Thank you.
Did you receive the talking about the festivals?
This is still under discussion, what themes we're going to have. In 98, there was a curriculum team under Hari Kesh, and we came out with a list of 30 themes, many of which were not festival-based. Like there was one on Kapila and Devahuti, for example. Then there's the themes that Tapas Vini has. Some of them are festival-based, some of them are not. Then we have another... Where's the other list of themes? We have another one. Oh, we have another one from Tarini Radha from Chennai. I don't know if you know her. She has a list of 10 themes which are not festival-based. I personally like the idea of having festival-based themes because I feel that for most children, if you sit in the back, you're forcing me to hurt my throat. Please give up your shyness and move forward. So
this is effective.
It's just the truth. Just speaking truthfully here. I'm sorry, I'm born and raised in New York City, and we're very upfront, and we're not at all diplomatic. So I'm sorry, I'll probably offend all of you culturally here. I'm really just like flat out on the table. I prefer festival themes because the children naturally are coming to a temple for festivals. That's a natural connection between a child and Krishna consciousness. So they're already coming for festivals. Why not have the education grouped around festivals? That's my feeling. And that came from research I did. I did 1 semester in the doctoral program. I did some research on... I interviewed people who brought up in the movement. I did document research as to what really made the difference for these children. And much to my dismay, it wasn't the curriculum. You know, I ran and altogether spent 27 years in Gurukula, and 18 of them I was running schools. And I always considered the curriculum was like the thing. But it wasn't. For them, it was the festival days. It was going on Harinams. It was the special things. It wasn't, you know. So once I saw that, I said, wow, we've really got to tap into those special things for the kids to give them some kind of peak experience. So that's my preference. I'm not in a position where I can write everything myself. So I'm working with one devotee, Neela Madhava, who was born in Krishna consciousness. Please sit up front. Please sit up front so I don't have to strain my voice. Please sit up front. Thank you so much. And a lot of it is going to depend on what her enthusiasm is and what she wants to do. You know, when you're working with somebody and you dictate to them, that's not as effective as if you work with them and it also comes from them. So, right now she wants to do a Lord Chaitanya theme. She's right now visiting Mayapur and it's around Gopurnima time. And we already have a Lord Chaitanya theme in our festival's curriculum. So I said, okay, well, you can pull a lot from that. We already have an existing Lord Chaitanya theme. So we're going to start with that, see how well we work together. Just see if it works, see if it meshes. She's going to write one lesson. If we're able to work together nicely, then we'll go on to do a whole theme. If that works nicely, then we're going to really take it to the masses and do massive fundraising and try to get this off the ground. So prayers are solicited. Prayers and good wishes. And can you hear me in the back with the AC and the kirtan? Oh, for goodness sake, just go online and take a look at it.
All right.
If you look under free educational materials for children and youth, festival themes, there's 5 festival booklets there, about 250 pages each. And they're divided up into 4 or 5 age groups. And they're divided by Panchanga Bhakti. So there's a section on Shastra, a section on holy places, holy name, association of devotees and deity worship. And under each section, there's activities for all ages, and there's activities by age group, and there's resources. And I mean, that's, I would call that a crude organization. It was something that I did with minimum help and no money. So it's very serviceable. I mean, it's been around now for, 10, 12 years, those books have been around. So I get a lot of, I know a lot of devotees are using them. Now, if you want to see what we're planning for a more developed theme, also on my website, you can find the curriculum sample, which has, and I didn't bring it with me. I have a printout, and I didn't bring it with me. It's in the flat. I brought it with me to all the other classes, and I didn't show it to anybody. And then today, when I should show it to everybody, Kali Yuga brain. Anyway, if you go onto my website, you will see a PDF. Sorry about that. Can't believe I did that. But anyway, you can go onto my website and take a look. It's the curriculum sample, I believe it's called. It's going to be also in the section for children and youth. Please sit as close as you can because I have no mic. If you sit back, then I have to talk very loudly. Please sit as close as you can. Maybe you can take the chair and like bring it up in the aisle or something. So if you take a look there, those are just 2 random lessons, one on Govardhan and one on Lord Chaitanya. But we'll give you a little idea of, at least right now, March 17, 2019, what my vision is for how the curriculum will be developed. But it's a work in progress. We have a team of about 45 people that are already working on this. And so our aim is to do a theme at a time, get feedback, and so forth and so on. I mean, I have a dream. I have a vision of what I want it to be.
But you also have, like, you know, dramas and stuff like that, like, you know, the actual scripts and stuff like that. Do you have it?
Well, that would be lovely. Join our team. Write them.
We do have, actually.
Join our team. Write them. Give me your name, email address. I'll put you on the Google group. I'm kind of busy. So I need a team. I need people who are going to contribute different things. like you. No, seriously, we need help. We're not going to be able, this is not a one pony show. It's not something I can direct it. I can organize it. I can raise the funds. I can manage it. I can be the project manager. Maybe at some point I'll get a project manager for it too. I don't know. But I can do that, and I can write some of it. But mostly I'm busy at this point in my life. I'm working on two books. I'm the chair of the Shastric Advisory Council. I'm busy. So I need help to put this together.
You see, in our temple, we have this very, very talented priest these days, compared to what it was previously. So they come up with lots of, dramas.
Great.
Even
share them.
Dances and all.
Great.
You know, choreography
share them.
And all that. You can put it there.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it. Give it to me. Yes. I love that. I love stuff written by the youth. Absolutely. In North Carolina, we performed a drama written by my oldest grandson, who at that now he's 20. That time he was 6. Please don't sit all the way in the back. Then I have to speak this loudly for you to hear. Maybe you could take the chair and bring it up closer. Thank you. But yes, any of you who want to contribute, please give me your name and email. Contribute as much as you want. No obligation. No pressure. Contribute as much or as little as you want. If you have contributions from youth that you can give, please do that. I don't know how many of you have seen our Learn to Read program. How many of you have seen Dr. Best Learn to Read? Oh my God, seriously, one person. Hare Krishna. Two. Wow. Okay, so we put together a literacy program to teach children how to read in Krishna consciousness. That was a 3-year program, 200 people all over the world. So this is going to be an even bigger project than that. And we can use a lot of help. No help's too small. Little spiders throwing grains of sand are also gratefully accepted. Sometimes it's that one paragraph of insight from somebody that turns a whole project around. So, if you can contribute drama scripts and lesson plans and artwork, yay! And if you can contribute a paragraph here and there that said, have you thought about this? That's sometimes that one paragraph just changes a whole project. But I need your aim and your name and an email that is, if you have a Gmail, that's the best that we can put on the Google group. Somebody else? Thank you for asking such exciting questions. Get me to talk about the curriculum I forgot to bring with me to show you.
Nobody has questions? Can I ask some questions
then? What would your advice be to... for children when they're at home? I mean, most of these children, they go to public schools, right? So how would you advise that we, guide them at home? These are, whatever we talk about our curriculum for Sunday schools and everything. So at home, what would you...
Well, first of all, at home, you should have some kind of regular sadhana program, either in the morning or in the evening. And that regular sadhana program should be joyful and fun and engaging the children in meaningful service. Be very careful about doing anything that's coercive or heavy. You don't want to associate negative emotional experiences with sadhana. But there should be some regular sadhana program where there's some kirtan, hopefully some japa. We have on my website in the section for children, there is a book called Collective Worship. In that book called Collective Worship, there's guidelines for japa and kirtan with children. So I would really suggest that you read that. I have some seminars that I give on japa with children. You can also find that on ISKCON Desire Tree or YouTube. Then in addition, use the time at home for stories, telling stories about Krishna, about Krishna's devotees. And they should learn some practical life skills. Life shouldn't be just about academics. Children are welcome in a seminar about children. Children are always welcome in my classes, but especially if it's class about children. If any of you can't handle children's noises, you don't belong here in this meeting. Seriously, you know, you're in the wrong room. Teach them practical life skills. All kids should learn how to cook. Boys and girls should learn how to cook. You know, they should learn how to fix things. And get them involved in some service for Lord Chaitanya's mission. He agrees. He's ready. He wants to start this afternoon.
He's already attending your meeting.
There you go. Look at that. I don't think you should start them quite that young, but
hey. He says it's okay.
He says it's okay. I'd say by age 4, children can be doing something useful. And certainly by age 11, they should be doing something for the mission. You people who are losing your older kids, it's because they're not involved in the mission. I'm just telling you this flat out. Or because they got fried by some negative emotional experience.
So how do you bring them back?
You have a window of opportunity with kids. And at a certain point, the window closes. Take it seriously. Take it very seriously. You have till they're about 16. And then the window more or less closes. And then you can deal with them like you deal with any adult. And that's it. Now, if they're living in your house, you deal with them like an adult who's living in your house. And if they live in your house rent-free, you deal with them as you deal with an adult who's living in your house rent-free. You can have rules for an adult who's living in your house rent-free. But your ability to influence them after a certain age is very limited. It's really as much as I can influence you or you can influence you. You have to voluntarily choose to come here and sit down and listen to me. And you can voluntarily choose to get up and walk out whenever you like. And you can sit here and not walk out because you think it would be rude, but actually stop listening. And they, you know, so once they hit a certain age, you're pretty much you're done, except as a friend. So take it seriously. If you're always running around busy with other things, you don't have time to spend with them, you don't engage them in the mission when they're young, you know, I don't know what to say. There's a long childhood in the human species for a reason. The demigods grow up right away, and most animals don't have such a long childhood. So we have this long childhood. It's an opportunity when you can really mold and influence a human being.
Mataji, have you had any experience in a mixed family? You know, sometimes a lot of devotees, they are lucky that their parents are devotees, grandparents are devotees, but not all families are like that, and 90% of the other members of the family are not. And I think that's where you said about the window, when we lose all the kids, is because that window is also a lot of influence come from outside, which is in their own house.
Mm.
And that's when they can get fried.
Well, I mean, I talk about, I have a whole seminar on this, which I don't have time to give now. You can find it on YouTube. But four main keys, one of them is relationships of love and trust. And yeah, if they have a relationship of love and trust with someone who's pulling them away from Krishna consciousness, whether it's another family member or whether it's the kids at school, that can be really a problem. But at least what can you control? You can control the relationship of love and trust you have with your kids. I mean, when I was growing up, my father had a much bigger influence on me than my mother had. 100 times, probably. Because he spent time with me and she didn't. I mean, it's just that simple. She spent time with me if she was taking me somewhere that was good for me. you know, she was taking me to a museum. I grew up in New York City. You know, she was always taking me to opera and theater and puppet shows and museums and things like that. Whereas my father would be with me to be with me. He was with me for 2 hours every morning from the time I was two until I went to university. And because of that, anything my father wanted me to do, I'd do. Anything he didn't want me to do, I wouldn't do. But I was not like that with my mother. I guess I wasn't.
I think from my own experience, that's the part where it's a bit...
I told you, anyone who doesn't like children needs to be in another room.
Usually,
those are just little happy noises. It's
fine. Yeah, yeah.
It's fine. As long as he's not like screaming, it's fine.
Like personal experiences, like, you know, when we become Krishna conscious, particularly after we get initiated, almost initiated, certain things are rules already, like, you know, going out, eating in non-vegetarian type mainstream places and all that. And it is always natural, and especially today, McDonald's and places like this are a place of interest, and, you know, my parents take the kids out. How do you cannot compete with that. Like, no matter how much attention you give a child, you can't compete on that level. And so that's how the rift happens.
Relationships of love and trust. That's the first thing. And, I would hope you can say to your parents, please don't take my kids to McDonald's.
It's an explosive offense.
But it's definitely hard. You know, I know a kid who asked me, you know, why are grandma and grandpa not vegetarians? You know, what could I say? I could just say, well, they were right there, you know. It's like, well, that's their choice. Well, what am I supposed to say? It's a very delicate kind of a situation. But also you want to give them positive emotional experiences in Krishna consciousness. You say you can't compete with that, but I humbly disagree. I think that we have a lot of amazing experiences in Krishna consciousness, but generally we don't involve the children in those experiences. Our society is very adult-centered. And we arrange our festivals and our peak emotional experiences more for the adults, and the children are shuttled off to the side, often doing some time-wasting craft just to keep them busy so the adults can be engaged doing what they want to do. But what makes it for the kids is having these peak emotional experiences in Krishna consciousness. So again, I refer you to my seminar where I go into this more in depth. But I think we can give them much more powerful emotional experiences than eating at McDonald's, which is like, really, eating at McDonald's? That's not that exciting. But are we giving them those experiences? And I think people, you know, like Manu, what's his name? Manohar now, I think, who takes the kids on a bus tour. That's part of his idea, to give them these peak emotional experiences. Indrajana Swami, who takes the kids out on the Polish tour. Really, he's not... Is he bothering anybody? Just be peaceful, Prabhu. The only person he's bothering is you. You're so worried he's bothering all of us that you keep moving further and further back.
It's okay, my hearing's very sharp, my buddy.
I think all of us, child noises are already like the AC fan. We don't hear. It's just background. It's fine.
Yeah, that's the second half.
And then the other thing is to involve them in the mission. Get them involved in the mission. Give them a place in the society. Don't treat them like children. Give them a place in the society instead of treating them like bothersome creatures that you have to keep out of the way until they become 25 and useful. Have them be useful when they're young. They can be useful when they're young. And don't just give them namby-pamby crafts to do just to keep them busy. Give them something that's actually productive and important to do. Make them part of the society. I mean, a very simple example in Mayapur Dham, you have the boys from that one school that sing the Shikshastika every morning. That may seem like a very minor thing, but it's part of the morning program, and it's only done by those boys. Then you go on the elephant procession, and it's done by the kids. That elephant procession is probably 90% done by children and teenagers. They're not just, you know, coloring a picture that gets put up on a refrigerator and nobody cares about. They're doing something that's actually part of the fabric of the community. Have your kids engaged like that.
I think that's an important point, Mataji. Maybe for this temple, a suggestion like that would be for simple aunties like Tulsi Aarti, Guru Puja. Time for kids.
That would be a good start.
Because they feel important.
That would be a good start. Well, make them actually not feel important, make them be important. You know, actually make them be important. All of us are looking for some place where we have meaning in our life. Everybody wants to have meaning. And the way we have meaning is where I use my unique talents and my unique personality to do something that's bigger than myself. That's how we define meaning. And in traditional societies, children were doing adult level work. I mean, Krishna, by the time he was like 3 or 4, was taking care of the calves. I don't know if you'd get arrested for that now, but that was... I mean, when I've been to Indonesia, when I was out at Sumatra, I saw that. I saw the little children out in the rural areas. Little children, 3, 4 years old, were already doing meaningful work. So that was the old tradition. I mean, unfortunately, with Industrial Revolution, that became child labor, and the children became damaged. So as a response to the Industrial Revolution, we're like, no, don't have the children do anything meaningful till they have their master's degree. And then they play video games to try to find meaning in their life. That's why they play video games, by the way. It's a substitute for learning a craft and having a job. That's what it is. You feel you can master something. So that urge to master something and do something meaningful, and it's there in all humans, but particularly males, and it needs to be engaged. It needs to be engaged. It needs to be engaged, and the younger the better. And, you know, if you can't get the leaders of the temple on board, then do something parallel where they can use their talents. I mean, my youngest son created a new songbook for the temple when he was, I don't know, 11 or something like that. He got the songs, he did the layout, he got the printing done, everything. My oldest son was working for the BBT by the time I think he was 14. They were both working for my husband's computer business. All three of them helped teach in the Gurukula. And not only did it help them want to be a member of ISKCON, but it also gave them a big head start out in the work world. I mean, I remember my oldest son telling me, when he didn't even have his undergrad degree, he was already having a job as a computer programmer while he was getting his undergrad degree. And he told me, he said, Mata, I know more than the guys there with master's degrees because I started coding when I was 11. So... you know, my youngest son was the second in charge of an international textile company. How old was he? 20 maybe? And he also didn't have his degree yet. He was the company was paying for him to get his degree. And as soon as he got his degree, he was put in charge of a prasadam business. He was the CEO of a prasadam company. Immediately. Why? He was helping my husband manage his computer business from the time he was like 10, 11 years old. Then he was helping me run the Gurukula. And it was meaningful work. It wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just something to keep the kids busy. And because of my kids helping in the Gurukula, they all know how to teach. So my youngest son now runs his own consulting business where he goes in and teaches companies how to install and customize software. So, you know, he learned about software from his father, but he learned about teaching from me. And he knows how to teach people how to use how. He's got his degree is in business administration. But he learned that from practical work. And so many of my students told me, they said, you know, what we learned in your school really helped us in our lives. Whereas I think most people who go to school, they say, I don't use anything from school in my life. Well, that's a problem now, isn't it? That's a serious problem. So when I ran schools, I mean, I had to do some things that were useless just so they could go to university and do other useless courses. I mean, I had no choice about that. And I would say, yes, this is a useless course. I'm sorry. It's just required by the universities. Just tolerate it. But basically, I'm sorry, I told you I'm from New York and I'm really straight out on the table. So basically what I did was I looked at what are adults doing? What do adults really use in their life? What are the practical life skills? And then I made sure that those were in the curriculum, in the school and in our home. I mean, it's ridiculous. People have a master's degree and they don't know how to make pasta, you know. I mean, that's ridiculous. Seriously, you know, they can't make pasta. They can do business accounting, you know. It's like,
I was struggling when I was posted offshore in a sea. Everybody was non-vegetarian. I had to cook for myself.
And you didn't know how to cook.
I really wishing I did learn how to cook.
Yeah, you know. You have to be 25 and you have your master's in engineering and you can't make rice, you know. You can't make rice. You can't boil some beans, you know. So this is, you don't know how to do laundry. I mean, I grew up with servants. I didn't know how to do laundry.
One temple president doesn't know how to make dosa.
Terrible, huh? Well, I don't know how to make dosa. I don't know what to say. It's on my list of things I want to learn how to do.
We'll teach you.
I do know how to cook. I may take you up on that. I was actually a hotel chef before I was a devotee, but we didn't cook dosas.
It's something like pancake.
I know how to make pancakes.
I think
that
you want one.
But anyway, that's, you're asking what the kids should do at home. Some regular sadhana program that's fun. Should be fun. Should have a good time. Should be exciting, which means you may have to talk to them about what they feel is exciting. Like recently, I was taking care of my three oldest grandsons after my son and his wife moved because they were still in university. And we all agreed we wanted a morning program. And I said, what do you want to do? Like one of my two of them were initiated. And one of them said, well, I don't want to do stories. I want to do philosophy. Okay. We worked out what kind of a program we wanted to do that they liked, and then I would ask them, are you happy with this? Do you want to make some changes? What do you want to do? So some regular sadhana, learning some life skills, and get them involved in the mission. Get them involved in something that's exciting and bigger than themselves and helping the world.
Making them feel important. No,
no, don't make them feel important. Make them be important. Feeling important is another thing. Oh, you're so important.
That means what at our practical level in the temple, what we can do is actually give them the responsibility of handling the auntie, some of them.
Oh, go beyond that. When I was in Melbourne one year, there was an 8-year-old working in the treasury. I'm serious. You're going to feel important if you are important. You're not going to feel important if just somebody gives you a prize and you do some little drama. I mean, I'm all for dramas, but it's not all of it. It shouldn't be some namby-pamby drama that's just interesting to the parents. Okay? Don't have them do some public presentation that's 10th class and the only people who care are the parents taking videos. Okay, if they're going to do a presentation, it should be a valuable part of the festival. Something that's actually valuable. Where the public feels enlivened by their presentation. The people who aren't parents of the kids up on the stage feel enlivened in their Krishna consciousness by what the kids are doing. And then the kids will feel important because they will be important. Engage them in things that are integral. Yes, they're annoying. Children are annoying. What did Maharaj say? It was their, what did he call it? Their prescribed duty to cry. Yeah. So it's children's prescribed duty to be annoying. They can't control their senses very well. They're dirty. They get distracted. They're not always so respectful. That's that's just their swadharma. And if you, you know, but we're all annoying. Everybody, yes? If we're honest?
Yes, yes.
Does everybody here have some annoying quality?
Yes.
That maybe even annoys yourself?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So, you know, just because children are annoying, just by virtue of being children.
How to deal with annoying children?
Don't so take it seriously. Focus on the good things. Really, don't take it so seriously. Most of the annoying aspects of children they grow out of, even if you don't do practically anything. I mean, really, seriously, they really do. Do any of you know the Kirtanir Amala Harinam? Any of you familiar with Amala Harinam? He's a very high-powered, very energetic person. And, I mean, I knew his parents before they were even married. His parents used to run both a temple and a restaurant. So until he was about 12, during Tulsi Artik, he'd run around Tulsi. I mean, run, you know. And the devotees who never had kids, they go, "Can't you stop him from doing that?" I'm like, "No." He said, "It'll be okay." You know, I said, look, his parents are these high-powered people who do all these amazing things, you know. He's going to be a high-powered, energetic person. I said he just doesn't know what to do with it now that he's 8 or 9 years old. So now he knows what to do with it. Once he hit 12, 13, that stopped. I didn't have to do anything. So a lot of their annoying stuff just goes away. I have another seminar on 8 ways to change bad behavior if you want to look at that. Again, I don't have time to teach that here and now. But keep them engaged in something that's exciting and according to their nature, and they won't misbehave very much. Most misbehavior comes because people are bored or frustrated. If we're involved in meaningful work, we don't generally misbehave, adults, children, whatever. If we're doing things that are according to our nature, that we love, that we're good at, that we get some sort of recognition for, and we're doing it in Krishna's service for the mission, we'll generally be very happy and very absorbed, and we won't cause much trouble. And that's true whether you're 55 or 5. If adults cause trouble, they're probably not properly engaged either, by the way. So, with some rare exceptions if people really have mental problems. But generally speaking, if adults are constantly causing trouble, it means that they're not being engaged according to their nature in meaningful work. 99% of the time.
Mataji, if they're a little hyperactive, it's not misbehavior.
Get them to do something that requires a lot of activity. Use it.
This big?
Yeah, that big. Use it for something. Put it to some good use. One of my grandsons is super, super active and always knows what everybody's doing except himself. And my kids and his siblings were always saying, "Mind your own business, mind your own business." And I'd say, stop telling him that. He's a leader, obviously. He's a manager. Get him to mind other people's business. So he ended up being second in charge of the stage show on the Polish tour. He did great. And I heard from so many devotees there, oh, he was the most valuable member of the tour. Why? Because he was always running around minding everybody else's business. That was his job. You know, you have a kid who's always showing off. Put them on stage. Don't tell them, stop showing off. Stop being the center of attention. Why? Put them on stage. Say, okay, now, show off. Be the center of attention.
This one kid, his ambition is to become a musician.
Okay.
What do I say to him? I didn't say anything.
You didn't say anything. You could ask him what kind of instrument, what kind of music. Maybe he could.
Not musician, Mataji, magician.
Oh, magician! Oh, magician. So tell me, if we had a perfect society with everyone in Mahaprabhu's movement, if all of Malaysia was swimming in Mahaprabhu's movement, do you think there'd be any magicians? What do you think? Would there be entertainment? If any of you say no, I don't know, do you want to live in that society or not? It would be a very serious society. We wouldn't have any entertainment or recreation at all.
Mataji,
except for Kirtan. Indrajimna Swami has magicians in his Polish tour. You know, every night Krishna goes to watch his entertainment. If you look at the Astakalila Lila, every night they have entertainers and some of them are magicians. Peter Burwash was a top tennis player. I think he was number 90 in the world. And when he came to meet Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, play tennis for Krishna. So a lot of us may go, what? One of the books I'm working on with a co-author, Rukmini, a.k.a. Dr. Ruchira Dutta, is about how to spiritualize your career, how to find the career that suits your nature, and how to spiritualize it. So I'm hoping that even if all of Malaysia were swimming in Mahaprabhu's movement, we would still have entertainment and recreation. I mean, Krishna says, it's not me, it's Krishna. He probably knows what he's talking about. I'm not sure. You want to check that out. He says that we should have recreation. Yes? Sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. You're familiar with that verse? Those who are tempered in eating, sleeping, working, and recreation. So we need some sort of recreation. Krishna says, if you want to be a yogi. And there are people in society who provide entertainment and recreation. That's what they do. That's their service to the society.
Mataji, let's say we're engaging in the house to do certain devotional activities like reading and all that, but we keep reminding them, they're not doing it spontaneously. Is it okay for us to just continue reminding them?
It doesn't seem like you have a very good system. It seems like you need a better system. So again, I don't have the time now to get into the details of such systems, but there's a lot of good books and courses into how to have things happen so that you don't have to keep reminding people. If you have to keep reminding people, there's probably something that's not quite right. So there's so many different systems for how to have regular activities going on in the house with children. And I hesitate to recommend one over the other because different systems work for different people, and it really comes down to relationships. What makes a particular system work is what kind of relationship you have. If you have good relationships, you can get almost any system to work, and if you have poor relationships, almost any system will not work. It's not so much the system, it's the mood with which you execute it. So, you know, I've used many, many different systems as a parent, as a grandparent, as a teacher, to get kids to do chores regularly, to get kids to engage in things regularly. You know, one thing I did with my grandchildren was we had a point system where they would give themselves the points. We had like a felt thing hanging on the wall that we made with pockets for each kid. And then we had little colored pieces of foam, each worth different points, that they could put in their pockets whenever they did stuff. So one of the things was 15 minutes of something devotional before breakfast. And they could choose. And we got some timers, 15-minute timers. They could choose. It could be japa. It could be reading. And we had three bookshelves of child-friendly, Krishna-conscious books they could read from. It could be kirtan. It could be polishing the deity silver. I mean, it could be a whole bunch of different things that they could do. And if they did that, they got some points. And at the end of the day, at dinner, anybody who got over 20 points got a little dessert. Like, I'm talking like a little dessert. But it was mostly a recognition thing that in front of the whole family you got recognized. So it was as much about the recognition as it was about the raisins. But that worked very well. Nobody had to remind anybody. The children naturally wanted to do it. Huh? That was a purely reward system. There was no punitive nature. It was a pure reward system. But it was a reward system where the children were rewarding themselves and they were keeping track of themselves, and going through the process was itself a reward. I mean, just speaking about myself, some of you bought my novel, Essence Seekers. So the way I wrote that book, I tried to just sit down and write it, but I have a busy life and it's hard to sit down and just write. So Google Calendar had come out with a new feature called Goals. So I checked it out and I set goals. What do you want to do? I want to write a book. All right, when do you want to do it? 4 times a week. 30 minutes a time. And it would schedule me, the artificial intelligence would just schedule it. And then the thing would pop up, time to work on your book. And it felt like it was another person in the room saying it, you know. If I had scheduled it, I would have just ignored it. But because it was popping up on its own, like, okay, I guess I better write my book. And I'd sit down and write. So I set up a system to reward myself. And after the 3rd or 4th session, I really got into the book and I was doing it because I loved it. So we set up a system of rewards where the kids were rewarding themselves. And they were monitoring themselves. And it was something, I mean, we also acknowledge them. But that's one of 100 different kinds of systems that you can use. And again, if the mood in the house is punitive or coercive, no system will work well. I don't care what it is. I don't care what book you read. I don't care what system you do. If there's a heavy, coercive, punitive atmosphere in the house, you are going to engender rebellion in another human being. End of story. So if it's a relationship of love and trust, it's a relationship of fun, of positive emotional experiences and meaningful activities, you're not going to have much of a problem with rebellion among human beings. This is true. It doesn't matter how old you are and what your nature is and who you are. It's a general truth about how a living being functions. We do things out of love. We do things for love. We do things for pleasure. We do things for meaning. This is what motivates us.
This is different from reprimanding.
Huh? Well, it's your duty sometimes as a parent to reprimand. If you never reprimand your children, you know, Lord knows what they'll become. They'll become like animals. You have to reprimand them sometimes. But if that's the general mood in the house, and if the general mood is engaging people in meaningful work, which meaningful means I'm doing something that I'm good at, that I love, for a higher purpose, that receives some sort of recognition. So if I'm engaged in meaningful work, if my engagement in Krishna consciousness is fun, if there's relationships of love and trust, in that atmosphere, then when I am reprimanded, I'm going to take it very seriously. If I'm not reprimanded too often. You know, if you only shout at your kids twice a year, they're going to really listen to you. If you're shouting at your kids 5 times a day, it becomes like the fan of the AC. They won't hear you at all. So, you know, it depends. I'm not saying you should never shout at a kid. If your kid's running in front of a car and you can't reach them, you probably should shout at them. But if shouting at them is your general way of dealing with them, it becomes completely ineffective. They won't even hear you. They literally will not hear you. They really, literally will not. So, it depends. And if I've got relationship of love and trust of people who are engaging me in meaningful work and having fun with me, I want to please them. We're all like this. I want to please them. I'm not going to want to please someone just because they're my parent. I'm sorry. It doesn't work. Not in 2019. Maybe it worked, you know, in 1719. When we were all in little villages and everybody knew everybody, and if you made your elders unhappy, you were exiled and you had no friends and no community anymore. Where the consequences for being disobedient to your elders was so socially and economically severe. If working couples have to send their children to daycare, what's your advice? Get extended family. Get extended community, build extended family. Please, please.
I think this will be a last question.
Yeah, that's it.
Anybody who's got a question, otherwise I ask it.
Can I ask if somebody, I'm sorry, you already asked like 10 questions, so if there's somebody else, not that there's anything wrong with asking 10 questions, but I do
anybody
have a long car trip to make today. Okay. Anybody else at all? Anybody else at all? Shy people. Any of the shy people?
can I ask one last question on behalf of the teachers?
Sure.
So can I mean, what is the greatest challenge that, in your experience as a school teacher, as a spiritual school teacher or a Sunday school teacher?
Parents.
No, no, as a teacher. As a teacher.
Parents.
Parents, exactly. I want that answer. So how did you deal with it? How did you deal with it? Because that is because... Thank you, Mataji.
You're welcome. I mean, look, of the parents that you have to deal with, some of them are wonderful. They volunteer. They're involved. They understand. They listen. They don't think their children are all God. They're wonderful. Then you have the parents who are just sort of there. They drop their kids off. They pick their kids up. They say, Haribo. That's the most of them are like that. And then you have the parents from Patalaloka. They want you to listen to them. They never listen to you. And, you know, I'll just tell you a really funny story about some Patalaloka parents. So this is a true story. I always figure when I tell these true stories, people think I'm making them up. This is a true story. So in the afternoon, one mother came to me and she said, I have my daughter in your school for the bhakti, not for the academics. Her daughter was like 14, 15. She said, "I can you give her no homework so after school she can just do service at the temple?" And I said, well, look, we're giving a secondary diploma here. You know, I can't have a kid go to the school and not do homework. And I said, anyway, I can't say, okay, all of you have homework except for you. It's just not going to work. So she wasn't very happy. And an hour later, a father came to see me with a girl same age, 14, 15, and said, my daughter doesn't have enough homework. I said, how do you know that? He was from Singapore. I said, how do you know? Chinese from Singapore. I said, how do you know that? He said, well, she can go to bed at 10 o'clock at night. I said, I'm sorry, I can't give your daughter more homework than everybody else. And after that afternoon, I thought, people want me to listen to the parents. Which parents am I supposed to listen to? The parent who wants no homework or the parent who wants double homework? So if your parents, try not to be the parent from hell. Really, try to be, you know, try not to think of the teacher as your enemy. And if you're a teacher, please remember that at the present time in the world, there is a don't trust authorities mood everywhere in the world. So it's not because you're a woman, it's not because you're young, it's not because you don't have a degree, it's not because you know everybody, it's not because of any of those things. This is going on all over the world. It's going on in the government schools, in the private schools, in the charity schools, the devotees, the not devotees, the Muslims, the Christians. Everybody is experiencing this in every country in the world where people no longer have respect for authority. You know, when I was a little kid, my parents listened to the teachers. And it's just not the case anymore. So part of being a teacher is, you know, if you can go a year with no crazy parents, really, that's a very good fortune. And if it's a terrible year, you'll have like five of them. But it's just part of the service. It's part of the service. Don't get angry with them. It just is what it is, what it is, what it is, what it is. And just tolerate it. And if they take their kids out, they take their kids out and then go eat a glubtman and be happy. You know, seriously. And I wish that we had some training for parents so they could learn how to be supportive of their children's education. They think they're being supportive by criticizing, yelling and screaming and this kind of thing. They think that's being supportive. But it's not. It just fries the teachers and makes it difficult. I very, very, very rarely had a problem child who didn't also have problem parents. And generally, even problem parents, the children were okay. So I hardly ever had children where the children were not dealable with. You know, with proper teaching methods and proper engagement, 99.9% of children are not a problem to work with. And of those small number of children that are a problem to work with, usually it's because the family situation is bonkers. But the biggest problem are parents. Often the children are angels and the parents are just nuts. They're just like... So, I mean, really, everything else... After that would be ISKCON authorities who weren't supportive or who were actually oppositional. Can you please put on a drama for Gaur Purnima? Sure, it's going to cost us $100 for the costumes. Oh, well.
No.
Can I collect it from the audience? No. Exactly where am I supposed to get this $100? You know, and but we expect you to do this drama and we expect you to do it in a week. So that kind of thing. Or can you keep all the kids quiet in the temple room? No. You know, so that would be the second, and that wasn't as frequent, but it was certainly there. Or just having a board meeting and making some policy that we lost our room. And then just them informing me, oh, by the way, we're now using your room to store the deity paraphernalia. What room do I use? Oh, I don't know. It's not my problem. So, you know, that kind of just, I've had, that would be my second. And then after that would just be the normal thing for everybody in life, managing time. Having enough time for your own sadhana, your own family, your own work, and your own teaching, and collecting the resources, and you know, having time to plan the classes, and learning different methods and techniques of classroom management and teaching, and getting skilled in your service, becoming an expert in your service. And that's true whether you're making flower garlands or you're teaching children, you know, learning, taking the time to become experts. But the hardest thing is that the very people who should be supporting you the most are often oppositional. That's the hardest thing. And it's endemic. It's not something that I see is going to go away anytime soon, unfortunately. You know, there are ways to involve parents in the school in a positive way, but even that doesn't work for everybody. You're still going to have some people that just like, really? Are you really acting like that? So you're still, no matter what you do, you're going to have some of those people. Even if you have parent-teacher meetings, even if the parents volunteer, even if you have educational programs, you have newsletters, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it does help if you have, like one of my sons sends his kids to a, well, now he's only got one kid in preschool, but where the parents were required to volunteer. And I think that helps by people actually coming seeing what you're doing. And, but then there's some people you really don't want to volunteer. You're like, I really don't want you in the classroom. That's awesome. Anyway, keep in mind you are doing the most important service according to Srila Prabhupada in the Hare Krishna movement. Prabhupada said this is the most important service. There has never in the history of the world been a religious society that survived without children. There's never been a religious society that survived just with adult converts. If we don't have good children, if we don't have, first of all, enough children, if people are only having one or two children, if we don't have enough children, and then we don't take care of the children that we have, our movement will fail. That's just a sociological fact. And the people training the children are the most important people in the Hare Krishna movement. There is nobody more important than the people training the children. Become experts in your service. Take the time to become expert, to really study how to deal with children. Are you ever going to be perfect? No, but that's okay. Don't beat yourself up for your faults. Everybody has faults. We all make mistakes. We all have faults. And we're sometimes tired and we're sometimes sick. And you know, that's okay. But become expert in your service. Really become expert. Please take this very, very seriously. Whether you're a parent or a teacher or both. It's such an important thing. And I'll just tell you frankly, it's really nice to see your grandchildren be initiated and get married to devotees and have devotee children. That is very nice. That is it's a wonderful experience. When you see your grandchildren are taking initiation, they're marrying devotees, they're raising your great grandchildren in Krishna consciousness, and they're contributing to the mission. It's a very, very satisfying experience. And it's an experience that's not only satisfying to you, but it's a faith builder and an energizer for the whole community. If your kids are all falling off a cliff as soon as they get to be 16 or 17, the faith of the community in Krishna consciousness and ISKCON is also going to fall off a cliff. The main people everyone's looking at for their faith are the leaders and the children. Should be getting a good percentage of your kids between 16 and 25 who are really enthused for the mission. But that starts early. You can't just start it when they're 16. I mean, a 6-year-old can write a drama that you have to edit a bit, of course, but that you can perform. A 7-year-old can make orange juice popsicles and sell them at the Sunday feast. So I know that our ISKCON society in general does not take children seriously. I know our ISKCON society in general is oppositional when it comes to families having more than one or two children. We're oppositional when it comes to providing nice facility for education, to providing money, to providing good people, to providing training. Our society is pretty much silent or oppositional when it comes to people in Bhagavatam classes talking about this. It's not on our posters, it's not on our advertisements, it's not on our 50th anniversary, it's not on our Prabhupada centennial. I know we have a serious, serious, serious problem in our society. And I know that that makes it difficult. You get either silence or opposition. I'm aware of that. I lived through it for a very long time. But it's still worth it. It's still worth it. Don't give up. Do something really amazing. All right? And I have to pack up my DVDs and my computer and get in the car.